Welcome to the SMA News Today podcast, episode 10. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. Today we are here with Anna and Freddie Vichen. They are from Berlin, Germany. So you guys want to just introduce yourselves and tell just kind of what you do?
I'm Anna. I'm here with my twin sister, my older twin sister. We just turned 40 a few days ago. And we're here for the SMA conference of QSMA. And yeah, and asked us to tell us something about us.
Yeah, we're here in Dallas, Texas. So after, yeah. And Freddie. Yeah.
And we're both living normally in Berlin, Germany. And we both studied medicine. I'm working as a toxicologist, and Anna is working for the Ministry of Health. So we won't see each other very often at home.
Okay, very. Yeah, I bet. The busy lives there. Yeah. Very cool. Did you go to the same school then?
Yes.
What school was that?
It was a public school, and at this time it was not usual in Germany that children with disabilities go to a normal school, because they had special schools for children with disabilities. But our parents
fought very hard,
and we always went to normal schools.
Very cool.
And then we studied in Berlin. We studied both medicine.
Very cool. That's awesome. So, yeah, I just wanted to kind of start off. First of all, you do a lot of traveling because we're here in Dallas, Texas for the QSMA conference. Is this your first conference or even before?
It's our fourth conference.
Okay.
So we've been to three other conferences.
Okay.
In Florida, Washington.
Wow.
And Kansas City.
That's awesome. I was at Kansas City too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember. Okay.
We knew you were, but
yeah. That's the Kansas City one was a lot of fun. Yeah. So that's really cool. So, we're just going to be talking today kind of about, your story in general and then your medical experience. And also, doing this much traveling, I am very, very curious to see how you manage all that. Because I've heard, it's like a topic that comes up every conference about flying, international travel, all these things. I know I've heard everything from perfectly fine successful stories to horror stories. I'm very interested in getting on that because I know you two are veterans when it comes to this.
Yeah, we take everything. We take all of the stories and good stories.
Have you always lived in Germany?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so we'll talk about that. Thank you for joining us today. So to start off, your twin sisters just turned 40, happy belated birthday. So if you can just tell a little bit about your story and diagnosis, kind of when all that, go ahead.
It's just all from telling from my mom.
Okay.
Because I can't remember.
Sure.
But we were born 5 weeks early, which is quite normal for twins. But when we didn't develop as we should, all doctors said, it's normal, they're twins, they're lazy, they were early, so it's normal. But my mom, she's a nurse, and we were her first children, but she said, no, it's not normal. Something is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And so we got our diagnosis very early. We were exactly 1 year old. Because she took us to a neurologist.
Okay.
And he said he saw us and definitely knew what we had.
He knew right away that it was SMA?
Right away.
Really?
And then they took a muscle biopsy.
Okay.
And they did it only with me because we were identical twins. It's easy, they didn't have to do it for both of us. And it was fierce as SMA.
See, that's really interesting because I've heard from a lot of older adults, like, I was diagnosed in 95, and even then, they knew what SMA was, but there was, no kind of research on that. That's just really interesting that your neurologist knew right away what it was.
1979.
That's really fascinating.
I think we were very typically. I can see it also. When I see a little child, I can see it right away.
Right.
Yeah.
And this was in Berlin, the neurologist?
In Berlin.
Okay, that's fascinating. So, okay, so from there, and you said you're the first children. Do you have any other siblings?
No, after us, our parents said, two is enough. We can't do another kid in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
And my father always said, I only wanted to have two girls. I have two girls, perfect.
That's cool. That's cool. Well, and he turned out very successful, so, I mean, that's great. That's awesome. But, so after the diagnosis, and, you know, I'm just trying to think, okay, so 79 in Berlin, what was it like growing up in terms of acquiring not just medical resources, but basic disability accommodations? You said your parents had to really fight to put you in a normal school.
But my sister and I, we never felt this fight. We never felt that we were different from other children. The first time I really recognized that I'm different from other children was when we had to change schools from elementary school to
high school.
It's called Gymnasium in Germany.
Okay.
It's kind of a high school because this school was not accessible. And we had to be carried down up the stairs. So I couldn't use my power chair, and I had to be pushed the whole day.
Well,
and that was when my happy life ended all of a sudden, and I really realized, oh my God, I'm different.
Right, right.
Before that, and that was the age of 12,
mm-hmm.
Before that, you could have asked me if I have a disability, and I would have said, What's that?
That's really interesting. Wow.
Because all the other children at school, I think we were extremely lucky.
Sure.
We had a class in school. There were many very different children. But our teachers and all the other children, they took everyone the way he is. Or she is.
That's really cool.
So they would have never had the idea to do something we couldn't do. And they always found a way how we could take part in sports. And I've always been the referee in soccer.
That's awesome.
We had the red and the yellow card. So I was the goalkeeper. I had ice hockey. How do you call it? The thing you play ice hockey with.
Yeah, like the goalie and stuff. Yeah. The goalie?
No, the ice hockey stick.
It's just a stick, yeah. For ice hockey.
And I always had the stick, and with this stick, tried to catch the ball. So.
That's interesting you say that, because I played, I did a lot of hockey like in the neighborhood when I was little, and I played wheelchair hockey as well at one point, but that was a lot of fun. But, well, and it's interesting you say that, too, about, you know, not feeling different growing up, because I had sort of a similar experience, too, because, like, until my SMA started progressing, I didn't really, it really didn't bother me that much. It's like, okay, I'm always in a wheelchair, but my friends always saw that. They grew up with it. It was very normal for them. So, I had a similar experience, too.
The wheelchair always was just one thing to play with.
Right.
We did horse riding from the wheelchair.
Oh, that's awesome.
There were up to 9 children on one wheelchair, because back at this time, there were no children power chairs in Germany, so we got our first power chair at the age of 6.
Wow.
And it was an adult power chair, so it was really big.
Oh, wow.
And really stable.
So
there could sit children all over on the armrest, on the backrest, on the footrest. So we were always, I don't know, up to 9 children in one wheelchair.
That's really cool. Wow. So,
and during sports, we always had to leave the wheelchair because the others wanted to drive.
Right. I remember those days too. I remember, you know, in my first chair, my brother would get on the back and I'd ride him around and all that. Yep. Oh, yeah. And I've seen kids here at the conference doing that. I was like, that brings back memories.
We are doing it with our assistants.
Oh, really? That's what, yeah.
It's very faster.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun. It's like, well, and seeing for our listeners out there at the SMA conference every year, they do a race between the kids and then the researchers. Yeah. It's always a lot of fun. But I, going back for a minute to, you said in the transition to high school, there was a lot more inaccessibility. So in order to get out of your chair, was it an aide that handled that, or was it staff there? Or?
So it's very difficult to explain, but they, in the end, they hired 5 students.
Okay.
And they carried us up and down.
Wow.
And in the meantime, they had to build. They built 3 elevators in the school.
Yeah.
But it took until we were in 10th grade. So it took 4 years.
So I guess, yeah, you said you, like, the high school for you was about when you entered, like, 12. So it's kind of like middle and high school kind of combined in Germany.
High school is from grade 7 to grade 13.
Okay, gotcha.
So we, it's a mixture. We don't have college in Germany.
Okay, interesting.
We go to school a little longer than here. And afterwards, we go directly to university.
Interesting. Well, and when you get into the older grade, are you able to kind of like start studying what you want to major in at university?
You can, but
not
you don't
really.
You
can choose 2 major
subjects.
Okay.
But the rest, I'll have to do the same.
Okay, very interesting.
But you can swap your decision afterwards.
Okay.
So I did, for example, English and French in our gymnasium.
Uh-huh.
And later I went to medical school. So it's not, I didn't have to do something, a science or something like that.
Okay, interesting. And well, and then when did you start becoming interested in the medical field? Because you're both.
I always was.
Okay.
And for me, it was very early clear that I wanted to study medicine. And Anna, she always wanted to do theater.
Really?
Or English.
Rock on.
My literature, but I don't know why, but in the end.
Gravitated toward medical.
They are twins.
They can't, I mean, I know several twins that are just joined together all the time. They
can't deny it.
Yep. That's okay. So, did you always know kind of what you wanted to do in the medical field, Freddie?
No, I knew that it's difficult.
Yeah.
Because it's totally insane to study medicine if you can't move. But I always said you have to do what you want to do because you can't be good in anything you don't want to do. And I started medicine and I said, okay, perhaps I'm doing something like psychiatry. And then I did an internship in psychiatry. And I said, okay, I will never work in psychiatry.
Okay.
It's nothing for me.
Right.
And then I said, okay, I study. And afterwards, I will see what you do with it.
Yeah.
It's okay, because I think in Germany, only half of the people studying medicine are working really as doctors. Most are working in research or in companies,
pharmaceutical
companies. So there are a lot of jobs I can do.
Right. And I mean, you're a toxicologist now.
That's very cool because I'm really working as a doctor. I give advice to other doctors in ICU what they should do with intoxicated patients. So I'm really working as a doctor. That's very cool. I found the perfect job.
That's awesome. And Anna, so yeah, what's your exact position?
It's very difficult to explain.
Okay.
There is the German government has a federal commissioner of the federal government for long-term care.
Okay.
Because long-term care is a very important topic at the moment. Because there is a huge lack of nurses in Germany at the moment.
Okay.
And we have to do something about this.
Okay. And the people are getting older and older.
Right.
And need more care.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because, I mean, I write about the American healthcare system a lot. And the challenges we face, I don't know what it's like in Germany, but essentially in a lot of states in America, you're basically punished for working too much because, like, it's very easy to lose your medical benefits if you have a full-time job. And that's a very big challenge for a lot of Americans with disabilities. What is that like in Germany?
That is like heaven on earth in Germany.
Really?
Because everybody has health insurance.
That's great.
Everybody has to have health insurance. So you can't be without. And it covers everything you need. And regarding personal care, everybody qualifies. Nobody can be denied because he or she earns too much money or works or doesn't work or something like that.
Yeah.
It's just that it's part of the welfare system, and that's why we are not allowed to save as much money as we want.
Yeah.
So we are now allowed to save up to 25,000 euros.
Wow.
That's, I think, about $30,000.
Okay, yeah.
Approximately.
Sure.
And we are not allowed to save more, but I can earn my money. I have to spend part of the money I earn.
Uh-huh.
So I have, at the moment, I have to spend about 500 euros a month. That's quite a lot. And I don't think it's fair, but it's better than not having.
I mean, yeah, hearing you describe this, I'm like, can we steal your healthcare system?
That's what I was saying. I think it's still not fair.
Sure.
Because the German welfare system says that they want to
encourage you.
They want to keep you trying, but you don't need it anymore. But in our case, this will never be the case.
Uh-huh.
We can try, but we will ever always need it.
Right, right.
And that's why I think it's not fair that they charge us too.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, I know that I don't have these 500 euros a month, and I live perfectly with that.
That's awesome.
Sometimes I think if I had it, I could do more, but it's okay like this.
That's awesome.
And well, no comparison to other countries.
Right.
It's no words for this.
Right. That's amazing. I mean, I wish we could replicate that across the world. But, and so do you, the two live together with AIDS, or do you live with your parents or what?
No, we live together in one apartment.
Okay.
And we both have our own personal care assistants.
Okay.
And we employ them by ourselves.
Okay.
So we have both a company and we are employers. And we both have 5 assistants.
Wow, that's awesome.
And they are working 24-hour shifts. So they work 24 hours, then they go home and the next one is coming.
That's awesome.
So we both have 24-hour care. But, okay, to be honest, in the night, we are sharing one.
Right.
Because it's not necessary that there are two when we are sleeping.
Right.
But if we want to
travel.
One of us travels and the other stays home. We have enough hours to have both somebody in the night.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So it's really good.
Well, that's awesome. And I'm glad you brought that up because it's a good transition point to talk about travel. So obviously, you know, you're here in Dallas, Texas. You were here for previous conferences as well. And you've been around Europe as well. So when did you start the kind of like either travel? When was your first time out of Germany?
Out of Germany, I think in our first year.
Really?
Our dad was a teacher.
Okay.
And teachers always have long summer vacations.
Okay.
So we went every summer 4 to 6 weeks on vacation.
That's awesome. And around Europe or?
Yeah.
We've
been the first time to the U.S. We've been when we were 11.
Okay, wow.
They traveled with us to California, Disneyland.
Oh, that's awesome.
And
Hawaii.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
And Grand Canyon and Las Vegas. And
I've done Grand Canyon, but I haven't done Hawaii or anything, so you're beating me.
They even did a flight with us over the Grand Canyon.
Yeah.
And that's such a little airplane.
I was so afraid.
Well,
I screamed the whole flight.
Really?
Yeah, I cried.
Was it discomfort or anything? Okay, yeah.
I was just afraid.
It was very bumpy because there was a thunderstorm.
Right.
And my dad sat next to her, and he had no time to comfort her. because you had to take photos.
Yeah.
Of course, of course. Well, you got to put priorities there. But, yeah. But that was what I was going to ask, too. So, like I mentioned earlier, that, you know, I've heard, and the topic of flight, especially in international travel, comes up every year at the ESME conference. And I'm glad it works great for you. I still am, my family and I don't fly. We're proficient at road trips, but like we just have, because we've heard different horror stories about, you know, wheelchairs breaking, all these different things. You have plenty of experiences. So like, what has been some of the like really good ones, some of the bad ones?
I don't like flying.
Okay.
Because it's always this fear that something happens.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's uncomfortable. Yeah. It's difficult to get in the plane.
Yeah.
It's difficult to get out. And I'm always afraid that my wheelchair is damaged. But if you want to go somewhere far away, you have to.
Mm-hmm.
I would never fly within Germany. I would always take the train.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I can stay in my chair.
Right. It's much easier.
Go by car, but
right.
If you want to go far away, it just has to be.
Yeah.
And, we only had one really big damage.
Okay.
That was last time at the SMA conference. In Chicago, they broke my joystick.
The mini joystick.
Completely. Because they said, it's too hard to push.
Well, you don't need a joystick, do you? I mean, come on.
They tried to make it.
To switch it on and to drive.
Without knowing how to do it. Well, then I had 3 days no wheelchair.
For our listeners out there, I'm shaking my head and, like, getting a lot of anger here. But, yeah. But
but in the end, they fixed it.
It was very good that we went to the conference because Permobil was there, and they did the best job.
That's good.
They tried everything.
Permobil is great, and so if any, that's fortunate that you were at the conference.
To be honest, it is like advertising for Permobil, but it's been great because they are all over the world, and we got our chairs fixed in Italy, in Denmark, in America, I don't know where else, so they are just everywhere, and it's a bit relief, because if you know they have a company there too, then it's not that frightening.
Right. Well, I was going to say too, like, do you have any tips for either when you're talking to airlines to, like, what kind of things you say to make sure my chair does not break or anything?
For the first time, if you was British Airways, and you just do it online, I didn't have to call them. The first time ever, I was a little afraid because I said, is it enough?
Right.
But it worked perfectly. And I had to call them because we always have a shower chair with us.
Okay.
And the second mobility aid you have to call for.
Okay.
And I called and I said, we have a shower chair to take with us. But I was already prepared that they want to know everything, the weight, the measures, and so on and so forth. And he said, okay, perfect, I have it. Good flight. Goodbye.
And then, okay.
And it worked perfectly well.
Okay, that's great, yeah.
Very easy. I always try directly at the airport to find the guy who is loading the wheelchair.
Yeah.
But it's not always possible.
Okay.
But if we find him, I always tell one guy how to push it, how to...
Where the brakes are.
Okay.
But sometimes it's just not possible.
Right.
And then I have to pray and say, okay, it will work. And mostly it works.
Sure.
But for example, one time when I've been to Kenya and to Mombasa.
Wow.
And on our flight back.
Were you just traveling there or was it just traveling? Okay.
I went on a safari.
Okay. Oh, wow. That's awesome.
And on the way back, I sat in the airplane and the flight attendant came and said, you better don't watch out of the window. They are carrying your wheelchair down a ladder.
Nuh-uh.
And I said, what did you say? Yeah, don't look outside. And there were two men carrying this 300-pound wheelchair down a ladder. But it survived.
Wow, it just amazes me that people think that that's a good idea,
I was lying because it was way home.
Okay.
And I said, okay, if it breaks, I'm at least home.
Wow. You guys need to do a class on this at a conference, because I know, have you done?
They didn't invite us.
Really?
Yeah.
You need to talk to the staff, because you're veterans when it comes to this, but yeah. But that's awesome. So, I mean, do you know how many countries you've been to over there, or have you lost count?
To count countries? We've been to, in Europe, we've been to
everywhere but Portugal, Greece.
And the Eastern part.
Okay, the Eastern part.
And the Eastern part is not very...
I've been to most of the Eastern part.
Okay.
I traveled by car to Croatia.
Okay.
And so I had to pass... Even Bosnia had to go in it, where the war was. There was a war 20 years ago.
In the 90s.
Wow.
In the 90s, and we traveled through Bosnia, and we saw all the damaged houses, and it was very... For me, it was a bit of scary, because I was a kid when the war was, and we always saw the pictures on television of the war, and then we were in Sarajevo, and... I saw, there's a hotel where all the journalists hide it during the war, and I said, wow, I'm here.
Wow.
So that was very impressive.
Wow, that's cool.
Absolutely not accessible,
okay,
but very friendly.
Right, that's really cool. Yeah, no, my parents have been to places in Europe too, and that's the other thing is, like, what's it like getting around just, like, the streets and stuff? Like, they haven't been to Germany, but they've been to Italy and... France and stuff, but like, what's it like just, I mean, between either public transportation, sidewalks, any of that?
It's
better than New York City.
Okay, yeah. I've been to New York City, I can imagine.
It depends on what you're doing.
Okay.
Because, to be honest here, it's hard to walk.
Yeah.
Outside.
Yeah.
You have a car.
Right.
But if you don't have a car, it's hard.
Yeah.
And I love the USA because I don't have to think in advance. Every hotel is accessible. Every restaurant is accessible.
Yeah.
So I don't have to think in advance.
In Germany, you always have to ask, are you accessible? Is it possible for you to go in for a restaurant, for example?
Sure.
And we have a little portable ramp for one step.
Okay.
So we don't have to stay outside.
Right.
There's only one step.
But if it's anything more than that.
Yeah. If it's more, but mostly it's only one step.
Okay.
And it's one step is definitely is a
problem. And Italy, France, it's all worse. But you find your way.
Yeah.
And for example, in Italy, I've been to, it was always also an SMA meeting. I was in Rome, and it was in the University of Rome. Outside of Rome, and we had a day off, the last day, and I just wanted to go to the supermarket to buy some nice things to bring home. But I asked at the desk, is the bus accessible here? And he said, I don't know, just have a look. And I went to the bus stop, and the bus came, and the bus was accessible, and I entered the bus, I went to the supermarket, and when I wanted to return, the bus was not accessible.
Uh-huh.
I said, okay, I have to wait for the next one.
Yeah.
Perhaps it's every second bus. And then came the second bus, and it was not accessible.
Okay.
And the bus drove away, and suddenly the bus turned around, came back, and the bus driver said, what are you waiting for? And I said, for the next accessible bus. But there are no accessible buses on this line. But but there are. I came with one. Oh, yeah, that's the only accessible.
They have one way over there. Yeah.
That won't come today.
Right.
But I said, and what am I going to do now? It was in the suburbs.
Right, and you have to say she's not because she speaks Italian.
Yeah.
Otherwise, she wouldn't have talked to him.
No, they only speak Italian.
Wow.
And I said, what am I going to do now?
Uh-huh.
Because there are only highways here.
Yeah.
I can't walk. It's not far, but I don't dare to walk on the Italian highway.
Right, right.
And I already thought I'd call the police and tell them to drive behind me and I walk. Yeah? But then he said, no, I will call my supervisor and wait here. But wait here. I said, okay, I wait here. And I waited there for 1.5 hours. And then there came a brand new bus. It said private service. And the bus driver, he smiled, right? And he said, ciao. Sono qui, solo per te. I'm only here for you. And so I had my private bus back home.
Okay.
So it was an adventure.
It sounds like it. I can only imagine that. I mean, I have stories from here in America, but I can only imagine just that. That's just one of many things like that.
But I think these are all stories.
Yeah.
You can tell later.
Yeah.
But I love about this is you get to talk to so many different people, and they are interested in you, and you get to learn more about them and how they live. And I know so many entrances from the back, or I've seen so many kitchens and restaurants because I could enter through the kitchen. But not from the front door.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting.
Yeah.
In the end, we see more than everybody else.
Right, right. And that's really cool to say. I mean, yeah. I think you need to write a book about, you know, all your travel stories. Oh, yeah. But that's really cool. Well, I mean, those are the main things I want to talk about. It's the only other thing I want to touch on was, so I should know this, but I kind of forget if Spinraza is available in Germany or not.
It is.
Yeah. So, have you started the project? Just curious.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Yeah. How has that gone so far?
In Germany, it's again very easy because it got approved last June.
Okay.
And if it is approved, insurance has to pay.
That's cool.
So they don't. They can't argue.
Okay.
They have to pay.
Okay.
And the only problem is to find somebody who would administer it. Because we never saw a neurologist for the last 20 years.
Wow, okay.
Because, well, you couldn't do anything at all, so why going to a doctor?
Right.
And there are no specialists for adults.
Okay.
There are, we don't have, I think what I love to know is that here there are many neuromuscular centers.
Right, right.
We have neuromuscular centers in Germany as well, but they say of themselves that they are not specialized in this way.
Yeah, yeah.
They are about perhaps Duchenne, and they do a lot of ALS.
ALS, yeah.
And other diseases, but not SMA.
Okay.
And so, I'm working for the University Hospital in Berlin, but I tried to get in contact with them. And they didn't answer. And after, I think, 2 or 3 months, I said, that's not true. I'm working for them. They should help me. And so I wrote an email to the director saying, hey, I'm really sad that my own employer doesn't want to treat me.
Right.
And we got an appointment 5 minutes later. And,
It is now in the ALS center.
We were the first in Berlin, so they didn't know what to do. They did nothing, no assessment, nothing.
Wow.
That's a pity because it would be good to have measurements and to have data.
Yeah.
Because I think even in Germany, insurance will ask one day, is it worse?
Yeah.
And it's okay to ask.
Right.
It's good to ask. It's so expensive.
Yeah.
If it's not worse, we shouldn't get it.
Yeah, yeah.
But I thought so. Next week we have our next injection.
Okay. And as to you,
I hope that they do assessment now.
Yeah,
because
right.
Because last time I said, hey guys, you have to do assessment. And they said, yeah.
And they built up a register of special assessment, I hope.
Right.
And they joined them, so.
I hope so too, because I mean, yeah, I just had my first maintenance dose in May, and then I have an evaluation at the end of the month here. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's just crazy that they're not doing any kind of evaluation.
I think it's important because there are countries in Europe
mm-hmm.
that are not paying for Spinraza.
Wow.
And we need the data. Many countries. And we need the data to show them that they should
yeah.
pay.
Yeah.
And so it's not for me. Not only for me, but for all the others.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Well, that's huge. Well, I'm glad you've been able to receive it. And you said that you were the first adults in Berlin.
Yeah, but now
I think number two and number three. There was one man, but he could still walk.
Okay.
So it was very easy to administer.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Well, that was the thing where, like...
They were very much afraid of just of the way to live it.
Right, right. Well, I mean, have the injections been pretty smooth for you? I mean, I just imagine if they're less knowledgeable about it, it's going to be hard to...
I'm not afraid of it.
Okay.
I know how it works.
Sure.
So,
it was
not pretty smooth in the beginning.
Uh-huh.
But now we found a way, and
we found a new
radiologist, and he does it. And
he's really good.
Good.
He's really good,
and he's very. After the second injection, he asked me, "Do you feel anything?"
Yeah.
And I said, "Yes, my thumb is back," and he was so happy. So the next time, he said, "Hey, are you feeling still anything? I'm happy to give it again." And so he's very, very friendly, very happy to administer it. And that's very good.
That's awesome.
It's a good feeling.
I can imagine. I mean, that's the, you know.
And of course, we brought him lots of chocolate.
Of course, yeah. Got to thank him for sure. Oh, that's great. Well, that's awesome. That I mean, I'm glad you've been able to acquire it and that it's going more smoothly. And now other adults are starting to
receive
as well. That's awesome.
Our best friend, she got her first injection last week.
So. That's great. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Really cool.
She said, "We have to go first. She wants to see if we survive."
Yeah, yeah.
And then she's
okay, you're good. All right, I'm ready. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, Anna Freddie, this has been fantastic. I'm sure we could talk all day, but I know we have to wrap up here. But so I just want to say thank you for joining us today, sharing your story. Is there anything else you'd like to say before we wrap up here? Or just either about the conference or any quick advice you have for other SMA individuals?
We invite everybody to come to Germany.
Okay, that's okay.
It's perfect, and you should try it.
All right, well, I'll make it on that. Yeah. I mean, your story has definitely inspired me to take it more into consideration. I mean, the fact that you've been to Kenya, Europe, America, all these places. So that's awesome.
It's all doable.
It is. It really is. So that's really cool. Well, for our listeners out there, for more stories like Anna and Freddie's, you can subscribe to the SMA News Today podcast here on iTunes, Podbean, SoundCloud, and here on our website at www.smanewstoday.com. I'm your host and community editor, Kevin Schaefer. We will see you next time.